Hey, 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 Matthias here. It's episode 17 of Lunch and Learn. Today's a good one. I got a chance to catch up with an old colleague of mine, Shane Fast, who is a former CTO and co-founder of Athenian, which is a legal tech company based in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Now, the story is very interesting because they actually pivoted three times before becoming what they are today. So we'll get into that. Also interesting is that Shane is no longer the CTO. He's kind of stepped down to a lesser role. We get into that. We talk about working, balancing family life. It's a good one. Stay tuned. Enjoy.
Yeah, thanks so much, Shane, for coming on the show. Great to see you again.
Thank you.
I have a quick story, a Shane story to share before we get started, because Shane and I actually worked together for a few years when I was back in Calgary. And I just have one of my good memories of Shane is when he was dressing up for Halloween. So we would have everyone in the office dress up on Halloween. And I remember that, like, I think I was only there for two Halloweens, maybe three, but Shane would always dress up at this, the cup of noodles. So it was like microwavable ramen cup. And he would come in with this huge, like, oversized outfit. And I just have this image of Shane over his computer, like, typing in on his computer and trying to reach over his costume. So my question for you, actually, to kick it off is, what are you dressing up for Halloween this year, since it's coming up?
I got myself a space helmet suit, and myself and a couple other people I work with, we're going to dress up as the crew from Among Us. So that'll be pretty good. I think I'll tape a cowboy hat on top of it, just because, like, you know how you can, like, dress up the characters and stuff like that? So that should be fun. Yeah, I got the white helmet. Mark's got, like, the blue guy helmet. So, and I can't remember who else has what, but if you ever played the game, you'll know what I mean.
But yeah, we can get started with starting off your journey, I guess. You started studying engineering. But yeah, just tell us a bit about how you ended up founding a company with a few of your friends.
Yeah, well, it all started in my undergrad. I'd been working on a wind and solar power forecasting project, and it was going well. So I decided to switch it into our capstone project, which is the final year project that many programs have in engineering in particular. It's a full year course where you take a sponsored project from a company or something that you've wanted to do on your own or what have you. And, try to actually build it or make a prototype or just execute on it, essentially. What we did was we took all this data from Environment Canada and we made a basic machine learning product that took all that information and spat out potential power forecasts that were a little bit farther ahead than what was currently available for power markets. And the idea with that was for arbitrage primarily, so people can, you know, buy and sell power credits or what have you. And that went well. We pitched it at a pitch competition back in 2016, and we were able to get some funding for a few months at a Calgary incubator. So that was going well, except unfortunately, the professor and our team had some disagreements on how we wanted to move forward with it. I suppose to kind of summarize, his primary desire was to just have it as an academic tool. And, you know, we just have different ideas of what we wanted to do with it. So what we learned pretty quick was to liberate any of that IP would just take too long and it would just be too messy. And it wasn't really worth, you know, sort of all that effort. So we just handed it back and said, you know, no hard feelings, here's everything. And, you know, all the best. Right. And, you know, we still have a good relationship. You know, I still talk to him and we still, you know, I'll still go and, you know, swing by the university and say hello. And he's had me over for a couple talks and stuff like that. So that's always been good, but we had time, right? So we had, you know, the better part of 3 months to use from our incubator stipend. So we were kind of floating around with a few other ideas. At the time we had met Adrian, who's now our CEO. I met him through a mutual friend, and you know, he kind of said, well, you know, if you guys don't want to waste another year or two of your lives, you might want to sort of straighten out your legal aspect and understand, you know, who's getting what and what your intentions are and stuff like that, right? Yeah, which sounds like common sense, but, you know, for a young engineering team, that's just not something that comes to our mind when we're just obsessed with building stuff. So he got us straightened out pretty quick and, you know, kind of introduced us to some basic mechanisms with regards to, you know, founding teams and stuff like that, and vesting and cliffs and sort of those basics. And, you know, he said, you know, once you understand these mechanisms, a monkey or an app can handle it. So he comes by a week later and says, well, why don't we build that app? His timing was really good. And our timing was really good that we both had, you know, a few months of burn that we could just work on something. So that was really beneficial. And basically, we started off with just a JPEG of what we wanted the platform to look like. And we sort of started asking questions and talking to people and, you know, started building stuff around those conversations. And that's how the company was born, essentially. We incorporated in the summer of 2016, and you know, we started fundraising sort of at the same time, because the pain point was really apparent. So our first product was a sort of a question and answer type form, where at the end, after answering these questions, some content would get generated, and basically you get a document that your team can sign.
Yeah, like there's a lot of those. Those services today for like legal companies where you can fill out a questionnaire and then they generate a legal document for you.
Yeah. So that was interesting. Like, we got a lot of initial traction from the startup community here in sort of our local ecosystem. The problem was when we were sort of reaching out beyond that, we got some really quick and harsh feedback, which, you know, in retrospect was really good. A little painful at the time, you know, but yeah, especially if you spent 6 months working on something, but good nonetheless, right? So, you know, we get questions like, hey, is this legal to do? Does it work where I live? You know? So quickly became apparent that people just didn't trust that product. People just didn't want to use it. So we pivoted. And what we pivoted into was document management tools. So being able to edit documents, share them, get them signed, that whole gambit.
Was there like, yeah, I mean, your first product was called Paper. Mm-hmm. What is this like document generation software? How did you guys decide to pivot? You know, was there, you know, because you had some interest in from people or some different companies. But how did you decide to move into the sort of document management system instead of just the generation piece?
It was a bit of a hard conversation at the time, because we basically had to completely scrap the first product. So, you know, basically a couple of people from our team traveled around, so like to Toronto, to San Francisco, you know, to kind of talk with like different people from different ecosystems. And that's sort of when the feedback started to gather and accumulate, even among like the few users we did have initially. I guess the writing was sort of on the wall as we started hearing how people were interacting with the product. So, you know, I think it was like February of 2017 that we just sort of sat down and just had an honest conversation about it. And we said like, hey, look, like, this product's not gonna work. We need to do something different. So, you know, at that point, one of our teammates had left at that point, right? So, you know, it was that kind of conversation. It was like, okay, either we kind of switch what we're doing, or we all go find jobs. So, yeah, from that, so, you know, I'm thinking about the exact decision process, but it was just, you know, it was pretty clear to all of us that we were hearing, I guess, from every stakeholder, you know, like, hey, this is not a winning idea anymore. So yeah, we decided, okay, well, let's try something different. And we weren't really sure exactly the direction we wanted to go to, but we wanted to get out of content generation. So we focused on the tools. So we already had a few, I guess, utilities within the first product that we were just adjusting in order to make that pivot. And based on other conversations we were having, it seemed like document management was a viable idea in terms of wealth building while we figured out how we ultimately wanted to meet our vision of making legal easier and more accessible.
And how did you go about doing that? I mean, so you identified that, okay, we've got to make this pivot. Did you then spend 6 months building these new features, or was it much more of a process of, I don't know, learning, iterating, and so on?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. So I would say early on, we weren't very disciplined with our product management skills. It was very reactionary and not very data-driven, which I think was part of the issue initially as well. We were building the wrong product. And then when we realized it was really, really, really obvious, you know, so we will tell everyone except for us until it was obvious. Not sure if I'm going in the right direction here with the question, but I know with the second product, we got a little bit better. We were a little more aware of that issue. That being said, you know, we were still kind of shooting from the hip in some aspects in terms of what we were building, but it was a step in the right direction. So, you know, we started trying to gather more metrics, started trying to gather more structured user feedback in terms of user stories and in terms of sort of more bulk conversations rather than anecdotal evidence. Mm-hmm. So I think over time we've gotten slowly better at that from the first product to the second product. But then once we got a few initial users, we started to really observe them and figure out, okay, how are they actually going about their day-to-day work? And one of our big clients, they focus on agricultural accounting. So, you know, all their clients are very distant and rural, and you know, they don't necessarily have the same access to technology that folks in the city have. And it was interesting because they were using it quite the same way that we expected them to. The way they were organizing their documents, the way that they were sort of structuring all of their teams and stuff like that. So we just started asking more questions and kind of interviewing them. And we discovered this interesting niche around entity management. I guess depends where you live. They call it different things. You know, Canada, it's called minute books. I believe in the US, it's called subsidiaries. More generally, entity management is just all the information related to a company's structure. So their directors, their shareholders, their compliance information, that sort of thing. And how it relates to their annual reporting and, you know, taxes and internal structures. So we discovered pretty quick after the conversation there was a very powerful niche within document management called entity management, and it was very, very underserved. So much so that like our product was the first cloud product that did entity management. Everything else that existed before, like our competitors at the time, were all on premises. So that was I guess sort of the key driver for us to pivot into, I guess, our current form, which is entity management. And that decision was also I wouldn't say it was as hard of a decision to make from going from content management to document management, but it was definitely It was definitely kind of like an oh no, like we had to build all this new product, right? You kind of have that bit of anxiety, right? Because you're committing like a whole arm of your development to making an entirely new product when you're just trying to get traction on another one. So mm-hmm. Resource wise, it's stressful. And, you know, I guess from a founder perspective, it's risky, right? Cause you haven't just pivoted once, you're doing it twice, right? In the span of a few years. So yeah, it's absolutely terrifying at some points.
How did your clients take that? I mean, you know, you have clients originally, and then you're like, hey guys, now we're pivoting. Get out of here. Hey, guys, get out of here. We're going into energy. How do you manage that sort of transition?
poorly. So I think the first one, we spent a lot of time with our initial users. Guys are like, hey, you know, we'll support this, and but we're building this new product, so we just heavily encourage people to just start using it. And it was free for a very long time, so it wasn't so painful to move people over. The second to third, like the second pivot, was a little more challenging because we were having to deal with the users on annual contracts, so making sure we're adequately supporting it. And I would say, unfortunately, we kind of have this consistent burden from a product point of view of supporting the older product. We still do support it, actually. I believe its sundown date is the end of this year, but I think it'll still be like an active part of the product in some aspects. So it's kind of, I like to think of it from an evolution form, you know, like the human body, you've got like parts that you have you don't really need, but it used to be essential, like, you know, your appendix or whatever. It's kind of like that. So, you know, plus, like, yeah, we could remove it, but you know, doing that incurs other work, and you know, from a technical standpoint, there are some limitations. There are some other underlying issues that prevent that. So yeah, it's funny because I've always wanted to have like a really clean, you know, chance to really clean up a lot of the product debt, but it's also kind of endearing and nostalgic at the same time. You kind of have these old things in there, and that, like, oh yeah, yeah, I made that three years ago. you're telling new people, and they're like, what? Why did you make it like this? And like, oh, you know, these are one of our sins of the past, and you know, we like to tease each other about it, you know, because as programmers, you know, we've grown a lot. That sort of thing, like, you know, just a little bit of an inside joke. Yeah.
And how did your investors take that? Were they supportive throughout all these pivots?
So I mean, our initial investors were friends and family, and they were pretty supportive. Like, I don't, like, we communicated, like, you know, the reasons why we were doing it, and I think they didn't have any expectations from their investment, to be honest. I think they were like, okay, well, you guys lose, you know, it's not the end of the world, right? And I think we made that clear when we took that friends and family investment up front. But fortunately, we were able to grow that with the new product, so I think right now they're very, very happy. At the time, you know, people ask questions, right? But overall, they were like, okay, well, we trust you guys. You know, you're family to us. So just try your best, right? So from that point of view, that was good. As we started bringing on more institutional investors for the second pivot, we had to really justify how we were going about wealth generation, and our plans had to be a little more drawn out. We're a lot more drawn out. So telling our investors, like, hey, you know, here's our sort of path to a million annual recurring revenue, and here's the date that we are going to get it by. So, and then when that date came, you know, we had to sort of talk about like what the result was, and not too bad. I think the first time, instead of a million, we got to like half or three quarters of a million in ARR. So, you know, overall, they're like, you know, okay, not bad, but now you gotta up those numbers. So, you know, they definitely put pressure on us, and they definitely, I think in a good way, because what they did a lot was they would just try to introduce us to folks that could help us a lot of times, which was great. It helped us learn and adjust where we need to, and especially putting people in the right spots. You know, I think it was a very productive conversation, and for the ecosystem we're in, it was surprisingly understanding.
So I have a fun game for our users to play. Every time Shane gets a Slack message, they can take a shot.
Oh my. I love that.
Well, we haven't really talked yet about your role in this whole thing. So can you just explain? I mean, you had like four, I think, co-founders. What was your specific role throughout this process, and what were some of the learnings you got through that?
I was thinking about how best to describe it. I mean, I think from day one it was, it was always about meeting the goal, trying to see out the vision. So very militant, whatever needed to be done. So very, very pragmatic and very just like, okay, today I'm working on code. Tomorrow, I'm talking to users, whatever needed to happen. As we grew and matured, I took on the role of CTO and I filled that role for just over 2 years. And while I was doing that, I was very focused on recruitment, team building, and process flow. I did a lot of the back-end developments in the beginning, but as things naturally occur, you do less and less of that, which I have ambivalent feelings about because I really, really like doing that stuff. And then more and more about like planning, strategy, and just overall management stuff. And then as we grew and started meeting some of our revenue goals, I found that that path wasn't really suitable for myself. I kind of felt like I was failing at some spots and I wasn't really experienced to kind of take it to the next level. And fortunately, we found someone that was more experienced and just better at that job and more suited for it, I would say, than myself. So I took an honest look and said, like, I'm not succeeding as much as I used to be. I'm going to switch out and take a lesser role in order to learn from this person and to continue growing, but also, adding value to our company. So, it was hard at the time because I felt like a failure for, a good 3 to 6 months. Got a little depressed for a while. Eventually I think, I got some help and talked to some people and, kind of was able to resolve that internal conflict where, I said like, okay, well, it's okay that this happened because, my vision can continue to grow and, I can continue to help. And, more importantly, I can continue to learn and, maybe someday in the future, not here, maybe somewhere else or for another idea or vision I have, I'll be able to, service that role, all the way through. Right. So that's, that was sort of my personal. And right now, what I do is I'm a team lead, focus on security, infrastructure, DevOps. And also I'm very, very involved in the recruitment process. So I will try to interview each candidate before they get hired. So I do a lot of that. That's that adequately describe my role, I think.
Going back to that that transition from CTO to team lead, I mean, it's a very brave decision, I would say. Could you go a little bit into details on what were the triggers to for you to make that decision? I mean, it's a very sort of, let's say, a self-reflective process, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I say I'm a very easygoing person. I don't really like conflict, and I think I don't think it's a tool that needs to be used, but it was a tool I was unwilling to use when I needed to. Getting kind of riled up is not really my thing. Also, just understanding like high level budgeting, sort of like high level stuff, like people pick up, doing an MBA or, those really high level planning skills that I just didn't know any of it. Right. So I was really struggling with that and confidently putting out my plans to, our investors. And
is that a bird or something?
No, it's my dog. He's,
do
you
want to
go out?
Was that a bird dog or is this a dog?
I got a black lab. He's saucy. Sorry, where was I? So one of the big things I did struggle with was handling contractors and consultants. So not employees. I find that it's vastly different than dealing with contractors. I think the underlying motivations are different and the underlying relationship can be vastly different. And I still struggle with that actually a lot, just with the level of diligence required, I find in a lot of cases. Not to like rag on consultants or anything like that, but it's a vastly different engagement, right? Mm-hmm. That was a part I struggled with a lot. I frequently racked up huge bills with consultants without kind of getting the value that our company was seeking. So that part was, I would say, probably my biggest failing.
One of the benefits, I guess, of you taking this step down is that you get to spend more time with your family, two kids. Yeah, can you share more about that? How did you set that as a priority? I mean, even before this happened, how did you balance kind of, you know, being there for family moments?
It's definitely a lot of the negotiation. So, you know, up front, my wife gave me a ton of support, but, you know, eventually, you know, they want to see you reciprocate. So first couple of years, I had a lot of flexibility and I was able to go to tons of events, stay up late and work, just sort of be very dedicated to my work. But over time, you know, the needs of your family change, especially as kids get older. When they're young, you know, there's it's a lot of work regardless, but when they're young, you can find pretty good systems and you can stay pretty consistent. Their needs are, I guess, more straightforward. But now that they're a little older, they need, they need dad to build a specific, like, Mario character with Lego. They'll need, like, a very specific bedtime story. They'll need, you know, they become more complex humans. So as they've grown older, we've had to renegotiate constantly in terms of, Now we need to take them to this event and you're going to have to move your schedule around just a little bit in order to make that happen. So my wife, she works as a nurse and her schedule is pretty consistent. But now she's transitioning her career. So now she's going back to school and doing that part time as she's working. So putting the brakes on my career a little bit in order to help her meet her goals. So you know, that's sort of the trade-off, right? So I was able to kind of go out and meet my career goals. So, you know, to reciprocate, you know, it's only fair, right? That I give her that time. And I think it's worked out well. I mean, we certainly had conflict before where, you know, I certainly was overcommitted to work. And, you know, looking back to it, it's a little bit silly because when it comes to a startup, you could work as much as you want. And you do need to put in a lot of inputs. But at a certain point, you're getting diminishing returns. You know, it's tricky to see that at the time because you're going to want to kind of just go, go, go. Mm-hmm. But you know, as I've kind of matured and kind of seen, you know, with some hindsight, I'm like, okay, well, I didn't really need to go to three events in a, you know, for every week for a year. I could have just maybe done like, you know, one a week or something like that, right? And maybe got the same result. So just kind of thinking more measured about that sort of stuff now. You know, like, okay, what am I really gonna get if I do X, Y, and Z, right? And trying to take more of a data-driven approach to kind of help with sort of my other personal goals, which is, you know, bring the humans I brought into this world and bring them to a point where they're adults and I don't damage them too much, right? that's sort of my other goal now. So.
Cool. Yeah, and I wanted to touch briefly also on some of the success you guys have been seeing recently. So recently raised a Series A. I think around 10 million. And I saw also this week that you like acquired the business. You've been expanding like in multiple countries, hiring a lot of people. And my specific question is like, what's it like from you, like now that you've stepped down and you still see the company take off like this? I mean, you're still involved with a lot of stuff. But what has that been like for you?
Very humbling experience. It's definitely hard sometimes to kind of see like, oh, you know, all this stuff is happening and, you know, I'm not directly touching everything, you know, like for the hiring, you know, for a lot of stuff I do have a heavy influence in it because I do talk to pretty much all the candidates at some point, but there's other aspects, you know, like a lot of the investing or a lot of the funding that's out of my hands now. So it's a bit humbling to kind of see that just kind of start working on its own. It's good though, because that means, you know, over time I've successfully been able to step away from the business in some aspects, not completely by any measure, but from some aspects, and it just runs on its own. And I think from that point of view, that's successful, because ultimately when I set out to start a business, I want to have it operate on its own without my input eventually, right? Kind of like raising a kid, right? You know, the idea is for you to be out of the picture at some point, so that they can be their own person. Same with Athenian. You know, my ultimate goal is to get everything to a point where I can say, like, okay, everything's running, everything's going doing what it should do, and I can go off and start something new. You know, I think I mentioned this joke to you guys before, but if you ever watch Silicon Valley, there's that scene kind of in season one where Big Head gets acquired by Hooli, and he gets kicked off the project for whatever reason, I can't remember, but instead of being reassigned, he doesn't get assigned to anything, so he gets put on the roof. So this is kind of an inside joke where if we do a good job as a founder, we'll get put on the roof eventually. So yeah, I mean, that's not to say, you know, I don't enjoy the work I do, or, you know, I don't want to take responsibility for things, but I think that is a marker of success, is if you're able to walk away and have the company still succeed, then you've built good systems.
Very cool. Looking back, I mean, since launching, if you had to say, let's pick the sort of the top three learnings, what would these be?
Yeah, I was thinking hard and long, what the top three would be, because choosing three is definitely tough. I would say know your limits. You know when it's time to get help and to add talent to fill in your gaps, and that's definitely a tough one, because as an owner, you're gonna want to, you know, maybe it's a bit of ego tied into it, but you know, as an owner, you're gonna want to have that satisfaction and control, but knowing when to let that go is important. Second thing, you're working to support your family. It's kind of everyone has a different situation, of course, but you work to live, you don't live to work. That's definitely tough to remember sometimes. And then the third thing, I think the health is important too. That kind of falls in with the second thing a lot. You know, you want to work to live, right? So taking care of yourself is massively important. I'll say that's the third thing. With regards to health, you know, I definitely packed on a few pounds. Now I'm kind of struggling to reverse that, and getting there in the first place is probably where I should have taken action. So I would say that's definitely the third thing I've learned through this process. Focus on your health when you can.
Cool. I guess we can start to wrap up. Do you have any lasting thoughts or quotes to share with the listeners?
Yeah. Primarily when you start with a new product and a new team, it's always worth your time to understand and take a look at the personalities you're working with and how they work. Not to say, you know, you're trying to root out bad apples or anything like that, but I mean, you might be. But most importantly, trying to understand, like, you're not trying to be dogmatic about how you set up your processes. You know, you're trying to be, I think, more pragmatic is the approach.
Awesome. Cool. I guess it's a wrap up.
Appreciate your time.
Thank you very much for listening. We really hope you enjoyed it. Our captivating theme song is The Vendetta by Stefan Kartenberg.
If you want to connect with us or send a guest recommendation, drop us a line at launch.learn@gmail.com or connect with Matthias or myself on LinkedIn. Have a great one and see you next time on Launch and Learn.
You guys generally ask what people had for lunch? I don't know if you guys
I asked about your costume instead, but
I had leftover tacos. And some macaroni. I love macaroni.
That sounds like sounds very healthy.
So the tacos are not bad. They were definitely healthier than the macaroni. But as I said, like, oh yeah, focus on your health. I'm eating macaroni.
Yeah, I know. We should put that together.
Do as I say, not as I do, right?
Right.
Thanks, gents. It was a lot of fun.